Sometimes things don't fit the way that we think they should. A friend recently told me a story about her toddler. So she was standing in the kitchen watching her toddler play with one of those multi-sided toys with the holes cut into various shapes on each side and then the corresponding pieces. She was watching her daughter play with that in the living room. And she watched as the girl struggled to put the square piece into the circular hole. The girl tried flipping the piece every which way, trying to shove it in there, and it just wouldn't go. The sharp corners of the square always hitting along the edge of the toy, just beyond the bounds of the circle. And then she told me when her daughter reached her limit, she watched as the girl looked around the room. She quickly unlatched the side of the toy that opened it up. She threw all the rest of the pieces that were remaining inside and then closed it and looked rather pleased with herself. Sometimes things don't just fit where we think they should, especially when we consider what happened to Job. By the time that we get to this portion of the book, Job has been the subject of a cosmic bet between God and Satan. It should be mentioned that this is not the red devil Satan, the fallen angel and head of the underworld that we are used to, that we conjure our images of. Instead, this is the Satan, the accuser, a rightful member of the heavenly council who questions everything and ensures that decisions are not made out of some cheap sentimentality. After God boasts about how righteous Job is, that he is loyal and faithful to God above all else, Satan proposes a wager to God that Job can be broken, that Job is only faithful because God has protected him all along. And Satan proposes Job will give up on God, abandoning his faith once Job loses everything. And in a surprising move, God takes that wager, allowing Satan to do his worst with Job, claiming that Job will never, ever curse God. God has gone all in on Job's love for God, while Satan hopes to prove this is a foolish bet, because Job only does what is right to ensure his and his family's safety. In some ways, Satan's belief is also ours. So many times we believe that if we are good and do what we're supposed to, if we have faith in God and count ourselves among the faithful who follow Jesus, then we'll be rewarded with eternal life. Maybe even believe that life will be easier. Yet Job's story shows us that we may be trying to fit a square piece in a circular hole. It is precisely because Job is the most faithful, most righteous man on the planet that he loses everything. His world unravels all around him. First, he loses all his livestock and any hope of making money. Then immediately after, he gets word that his children have all died in an accident. And then when his suffering is already great, he develops giant sores from the soles of his feet to the crown of his head, the text tells us. Uncomfortable with the fact that there was not a logical explanation for Job's suffering, his friends draw the only logical conclusion, that Job must have done something to deserve this. We try to fit a square piece in a round hole, thinking that what we believe about God and our lives must fit, especially when everything falls apart. Later this afternoon, Ida will make landfall off the coast of Louisiana as a Category 4 storm. And on this 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina making landfall, I cannot help but think of the ways various people tried to make sense of the damage in the weeks following Katrina. Culminating in many evangelical Christians claiming the storm was somehow the fault of the people of New Orleans. Reverend Franklin Graham, son of Reverend Billy Graham, even publicly suggested that the city was hit because of its sinful reputation. In the face of our grief and our lack of understanding, especially when everything feels out of our control, we'll seek to control at least the narrative of our own mind, assigning blame where we can. Even if it means that we're continuing to shove a square piece into a circular hole. Sometimes we just don't know. And we need to trust that God does. Which is what Job knew in part. But where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? He says, mortals do not know the way to it, and it is not found in the land of the living. The deep says, it is not in me, and the sea says, it is not with me. It cannot be for gold, and silver cannot be weighed at its price. Where then does wisdom come from? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. God understands the way to it, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. God knows. And God is here. God never leaves, even when we've lost everything, even when our world falls apart, even when everything looks bleak. God is here filling in the gaps in much the same way that the Japanese fill in the cracks of a broken pot with gold, recognizing that there can be beauty in our brokenness and the scars that we bear. God is here creating new life in the midst of our loss. Even if Job's friends were foolish and they repeatedly tried to force their image of God into the hole that was created in Job's life, they never left. They were always there. There is beauty and love that commingles with grief and suffering, both simultaneously existing. And it is because God is here, surrounding us with love, even when we cannot manage to love ourselves. And we cast blame on others. God is here and God is on the coast this morning and in the days to come. God is in Haiti and in Afghanistan. God is always found where there is pain and suffering, something that we know by looking at the cross. And God knows the way, even when we do not.